I wasn't a good man. I didn't grow up with the wrong crowd or fall in with bad influences. I made my choices. When the trial ended, the judge said I was the most calculated man he'd ever sentenced, and granted me life without parole. No visitors, no possibility of release. They buried me. And that was that. Until she came along. That day, guards pulled me out of my cell without a word. Two stayed at my sides, two more behind. We passed through corridors where walls sweated under fluorescent lights. Doors slid open ahead of us after keycard scans. Eventually, we stopped at a reinforced door. One of the guards stepped forward and unlocked it without speaking. Cold air drifted out into the hallway. Inside was a table bolted to the floor and two chairs, one empty, one occupied. Her eyes were already locked on mine before I sat down. She wore a grey suit with a faint pinstripe pattern, hair pulled tight against her head, skin pale but without blemishes. The guards forced me into the chair across from her, wrists shackled to the ring at the center of the table. She didn't introduce herself. "Do you want to rot here until your skin comes off your bones?" she asked. "Or do you want a chance?" She sounded studio practiced. I didn't answer. She slid a folder across the table. A thick black clip held the pages together. I could barely move my arms, but she didn't seem concerned with that. "There's a site," she said, tapping the folder with her index finger. "A cave, deepest ever discovered, deeper than anything on record. Our first expedition didn't return." She didn't blink. They made several kilometers down before something killed them. We believe it was biological, possibly sentient. She let that sit for a second, then flipped the folder open. The first image was an aerial shot of a dense mountain range, followed by several grainy stills of people in environmental suits carrying gear through a jagged tunnel. "We considered sending qualified personnel, but the risk is too high. We'd rather lose someone replaceable. You're a murderer, a terrorist. You're already a dead man. If this doesn't work, we'll find another one like you. Cheaper that way." She paused, then she folded her hands. "You won't be alone. After a short debrief, you'll be taken to the cave entrance with three others. You'll be outfitted with recording devices, weaponry, and monitoring equipment. There is a strong likelihood you will not return, if you survive and complete the contract. You walk free." She tapped the folder again. "Clean record. You pick where you go after." My first instinct was to laugh. I hadn't tasted outside air in over a decade. I hadn't seen a sky without mesh across it since sentencing. So, I didn't ask what the contract involved, what they were really looking for, or how many had already died trying to find it. It didn't matter what I signed. I'd already died once. If this got me out, even if it killed me for good, I was ahead. "Fine," I said. "Strap me in." She nodded to someone I couldn't see. I felt the sting of a needle in my neck. Cold spread through my spine before I could ask where I'd be taken. The ceiling peeled away from me. Then the light. Then everything. I woke in a bed with clean sheets, white walls, a smooth ceiling with a built-in glow panel that lit the room without a bulb or fixture. Before I could sit up properly, a door opened. A man in sterile clothes stepped inside, gestured, and stepped back without a word. I followed. They took me through a short corridor and into a chamber where the lights were brighter and colder. Four chairs faced the screen, three were already occupied. A man with a tag that read Hollis on his shirt sat with his legs spread wide, arms tattooed to the wrist, jaw unshaven, and a permanent smirk planted across his face. He glanced at me and snorted. Drew sat beside him, bald and built thicker, his hands clasped between his knees. He didn't react to me at all. He stared forward with dead focus. The third was smaller, shoulders hunched, nervous energy rolled off her in waves. She twitched every few seconds. Sometimes her head jerked to one side, sometimes her knuckles tensed, then released. She'd make a strange sound every once in a while. It looked involuntary. Nobody said a word as I sat in the last open seat. The lights dimmed and the screen blinked on. We were ushered into another room after the short presentation ended. Some vague footage of cave walls and sensor data. Nothing identifiable. This one had a long table, cold steel surface and no chairs. A man in a black uniform stood at the far end, holding a remote in one hand and a tablet in the other. "As you already know," he sighed, "you're going underground. You'll be outfitted, you'll be monitored. Your vitals, your recordings, every word you say will be logged. You'll have one guide. Her name is Wren." The girl with the tics, presumably Wren, glanced up but didn't speak. "She was part of the first mission," he continued. "She didn't witness the attack. She abandoned her team before it occurred. She was found days later at the mountain base." "She ran?" Hollis said, grinning. "You're sending us down there with a coward." Wren flinched and her shoulders jerked. She tried to hold still, but the tension inside her was impossible to miss. The man ignored them both. "You are explorers. You're being given an opportunity. Find out what happened. Find out what they discovered. Assess the biological threat. You will have audio and video documentation running at all times. You will not go off plan. You will not deviate from the route she outlines. You will not improvise. Do that, and you'll have a shot at walking out." They loaded us into the back of a truck with no windows, no light, no sense of movement beyond the vibration of the road beneath. Wren and I sat across from each other, silent for most of the first hour. Her leg bounced nervously. "You're right?" I asked. She blinked hard and nodded. "Yeah, sorry. It's not." She stopped and forced her head straight. "It's hard sometimes." "You were there before?" She nodded again. "What happened?" "Well," she said, "it's silly, but I was scared. I left before anything even happened, as you heard. I didn't have a reason, I guess. I just kind of felt claustrophobic, maybe. I don't know. Something about the place spooked me, so I ran out of the cave. I'd walked all night." I looked at her carefully. "And you still don't know why you left?" "I've been trying to figure it out, especially after they questioned me a bunch of times. I guess I did avoid danger." She seemed sincere. "You scared of going back in?" She perked up, suddenly full of energy. "Of course. Something in there killed my colleagues and..." She slowed. "They told me I breached contract and I was required to do this." After a brief pause, "Why are you here?" she asked. "I mean, really?" "I lit some buildings on fire," I said, keeping the other things secret. She didn't look away. "Do you regret it?" I didn't answer her right away. I watched her instead. "I guess so." Her eyes flicked back toward me, searching for something. Maybe she found it. She gave me a small nod, then looked away again. When the truck stopped, they kept us inside for another 20 minutes. When they finally opened the doors, daylight hit me so hard I had to shield my eyes. A dozen figures waited near a chain-link gate that had been rigged into a stretch of pale rock. They wore gear, helmets, visors and gloves. We looked at them in disbelief as they pointed toward a crate full of weapons. I took a shotgun and a sidearm. Hollis went straight for the automatic rifle and smirked when they didn't stop him. Drew slung a belt of shells across his shoulders and picked a pump action like it was a toy. "You're really giving us guns?" Hollis said, shaking his head and turning around to face us. "They gave the prison crew guns." Hollis turned toward Wren, who had backed herself against the side of the truck. She hadn't taken anything from the crate. "What about her?" he said. "Do we even need her? What if we take her hostage? Maybe walk her back out? Tell them we want a helicopter or something?" He didn't sound serious, but he didn't sound like he was joking either. One of the masked guards looked at him, and Hollis piped down. He looked disappointed. I guess that wouldn't work, would it?" A man in a hazard suit gave a final briefing. Equipment had already been staged inside. Ammunition, lights, nutrition packs, water. There was no communication once we entered. We would document everything, follow the route, and if we tried to exit early, the doors would remain locked until the scheduled retrieval time. The cave entrance was tiny, a little more than a slit in stone. The walls were uneven, jagged in some places, then smooth in others. They were wide enough for two of us to walk side by side with space in between. We moved through long tunnels that opened into chambers large enough to park aircraft in. Wren led the way. She had a tablet secured to a vest and a laminated map strapped to a leg. We found a flat stretch of tunnel that widened near a wall of crushed sediment. Someone had left old markers, orange tags half buried under dust. Wren told us this was the first stop. We weren't expecting to reach the next landmark until morning. We dropped gear, unrolled mats, and sat down in the dirt. Drew leaned against a slab of rock and slept almost immediately. After a few minutes, Wren approached me. She looked hesitant. "I don't want to be near them," she said. "Yeah, I know. Maybe I'm getting scared for no reason again, but I don't know. What if they do something?" "They might," I said. "Whatever, let's just stick together. The two of them and the two of us." "Sure," I nodded. She breathed out through her nose and nodded again. Then she lowered her head and mumbled something I didn't catch. We all woke up around the same time, and nobody spoke. We just started walking again. It was a strange situation. We all knew we could potentially die here. Whatever had killed those researchers was still down here, and now that we were getting closer, that realization was sinking in deeper than ever before. A few hours in, the cave shifted. The walls widened again, and the floor began to level out. The slope that had pulled us down from the start eased, but the tunnel didn't narrow. It kept expanding in every direction. That was the first place we saw the trail. It stretched across the stone like someone had spilled a vat of silver and let it cool. Long lines of dull metal fused with the ground, following the cave's natural channels. Some parts had pulled into circular patches. Others looked like they had been flung out during motion. Thin trails, scattered, but clearly following something's path. Wren stopped and knelt. She started. the original crew, there was a satellite scan. If I remember correctly, something in this range gave a return that matched heavy rhodium content. It was a really dense and unnatural concentration. It could have been worth a fortune, so it's no wonder there are traces of it around. We listened briefly. Drew talked about bringing some of it back and potentially getting paid for it, but no one answered him. We kept walking. More trails appeared. Some ran along the walls, a few looped over natural arches over our heads. It was everywhere. We had reached the junction where the ceiling opened into a chamber almost the size of a hangar. The walls glinted. Strips of exposed minerals caught the low light. Veins of gold and something darker ran through the rock like roots frozen in place. That was when I heard it. A series of sharp clicks echoed behind us. They were fast. I turned. It emerged from the bend in the tunnel without warning, moving on all fours, but rising as it entered the open chamber. Its forearms twisted at a sick angle, ending in serrated appendages that resembled both talons and surgical blades. Beneath its skin, if it could be called that, something pulsed in irregular spasms. Thick cables of muscle rolled beneath a fused, metallic and oily surface, as though it had been dipped in molten chrome and left to congeal in uneven patches. Its head was horrific, elongated, tapering to a point that hovered behind its shoulders. The jaw split downward instead of opening wide, unhinging into four separate folds, and molten metal leaked out in thin lines that hissed against the stone. It raised its head and looked around, almost like it was trying to listen. We looked at it in the silence, and then Hollis lifted his rifle and fired it. A full burst tore through the cavern air. Shells clattered to the ground. The noise was deafening. Drew stepped up behind him and joined in, racking around into the chamber with a grin. The creature didn't even flinch, but it started moving toward them, seemingly now alerted to their presence. It was fast and fluid. Hollis got half a breath into another laugh before it reached him. One swipe took his legs, another tore through his chest. I didn't see what happened next. There wasn't a sound beyond the gunshots and the wet slap of contact. Drew kept firing until the gun locked open. The creature pivoted toward him, already moving. I turned and ran, and that seemed to alert Ren. She moved with me, and her body convulsed in both physical and vocal tics. The shots behind us faded. Then there was nothing. Ren gasped. Her mouth opened, but she didn't speak. I pushed her harder toward a split in the tunnel ahead. We moved fast and low, and I started to realize something. It was blind. I slowed, pulling her behind a wall of rock where the ground dipped. Her head shook. She kept whispering something beneath her breath, split up by involuntary yelps that were too loud for comfort. "You have to stop, do you hear me?" She nodded hard, her jaw clenched tight. Sweat ran down the side of her face in streaks, and her whole body trembled from the effort of holding still. "It can't see, it can only hear us. You have to stay quiet." She nodded again, and this time her body stilled. Not entirely, but enough. We moved without speaking. Every step felt calculated, every breath too loud. The tunnels narrowed again as we descended. Behind us, sounds from the creature could still be heard, but it was far enough away to give us some hope of survival. Not even bullets damaged it, so our best bet was to try sneak past it somehow. We entered another chamber, smaller than the last one, but wide enough for the darkness to stretch past the range of our lights. The ceiling bowed downward. I stepped around a jagged edge and nearly tripped over a body, or what was left of it. It wore a suit, or what had been a suit once. The fabric had fused to the limbs, torn open across the chest, and peeled back at the shoulder. The skin beneath had dried into something grey, stiff and hollow. I counted three more nearby. Wren knelt slowly next to one of the bodies. "I knew her," she whispered. But there was no time for reminiscing or anything of the sort. I tapped on the shoulder and gestured for her to move. The tunnel dropped hard after that. We slid down a slope that forced us onto our hands, boots scraping loose rock. The air was changing again, hotter now, not from the strain. It hit my face before we saw the source. Then we rounded a bend, and the floor dropped out into a massive chasm. Wren and I stared in disbelief as a lake stretched out in front of us, smooth as glass. Not one made of water, but rather molten metal. Gold, silver, blue, all bleeding into each other in an endless loop. Heat poured from the surface. Sweat ran down my back in slow waves. My hands felt damp inside my gloves. I thought about how this was possible. Surely the heat from the molten metal itself would have killed us by now. But my attempts at rationalization were interrupted by a clicking sound behind us and a realization that we had just reached a dead end. We moved to the side and took cover behind a jagged ridge of stone at the lake's edge. It wasn't much, enough to break the line of sight, maybe enough to muffle sound. Wren's body convulsed, and she put both hands over her mouth, but if she made a single sound, we'd die. I could feel the creature approaching. The air shifted as it entered the chamber. She reached for me, her fingers closed around my arm, trembling. Her eyes met mine. She knew. I looked at her. I didn't say anything. There wasn't time. Even a whisper could have ended it. She mouthed something. I raised the shotgun. Her head shook, small and sharp. Her lips trembled, but she didn't speak. Her hand tightened around my arm. I felt her fingernails through the fabric. She tried to pull back. Her mouth opened. No sound came out. Her eyes screamed. I fired. Her head snapped sideways, gone before the rest of her had time to fall. Blood hit the rock behind us in a wet splash. Her body collapsed at my feet. The creature sprung into motion. I could hear it. It stood on top of the rock I was hiding and slowly dropped itself down. Its tail ran right past my arm, and it seemed to inspect Wren's body. It lifted her up by the torso and walked out of view. I could hear the liquid sloshing. Curiosity got the better of me. I peeked around the corner to see the monster slowly walking into the lake of metal, Wren's body in tow. The surface took both of them, metal folding upward to embrace its body as it descended into the glowing pool. Then, it was gone. The lake smoothed over again, silent, still, as if nothing had ever broken its surface. I didn't know how long it would stay submerged, but I wasn't going to give it time to come back. I stood and ran. I followed the same path we'd taken down, or close to it. I kept one hand on the rock to guide my turns. Everything looked different on the way up. Eventually, I reached the chamber where Drew had fallen. His body was bent in half across a flat boulder, split from the ribs down. I recognized the boots before I saw the rest. Hollis lay a few feet away, or at least most of him did. His rifle was still in one hand, his other hand was missing. I kept moving. By the time I saw the faint blue glow of the reinforced entrance, I couldn't feel my legs anymore. Two guards stood at the threshold, the helmets reflecting my face as I stumbled forward. Neither of them moved until I crossed the final threshold and fell to my knees. I didn't speak. They didn't either. One of them stepped forward and removed the shotgun from my back. The other one retrieved the body cam. They helped me to my feet and led me into transport. A little while later, she sat across from me again in the same suit. "We reviewed your footage," she said. "Your documentation exceeded expectations." She flipped through a few pages. What happened to Ren was unfortunate. She closed the folder and pushed it aside. "You've done your part." She gestured toward the door. The hallway stretched in front of me, too bright to focus on. A man in black uniform walked me through two checkpoints, then into another chamber. He handed me a small envelope. Inside were travel documents, a debit card, and a folded sheet with my new credentials. I was escorted outside. And just like that, I was alone. I walked until the facility shrank behind me, nothing more than a shape at the edge of stone. I was free.